This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You've made the commitment.
You caught the vision.
You want your family to serve God.
But sometimes it's hard to put feet on that vision.
Hey, how? Do visions have feet?
Shh. How do you get from principle to practice?
What do you need to know about the issues affecting your family?
How do you apply God's Word in the 21st century?
Let's talk about it.
This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
Well, hello, everybody. I'm Hal.
And I'm Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to Making Biblical Family Life Practical. In this episode, we want to talk about a subject near and dear to us, and that is raising real men.
The Lord has blessed us with six boys.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you heard right, six boys.
Right.
And the name of our book is Raising Real Men, Surviving, mm-hmm. Teaching, and Appreciating Boys.
Yeah, and that's really, that's what we hear from a lot of people. How am I going to survive this? Because a lot of families, a lot of moms in particular, get kind of overwhelmed with all of the energy and the rambunctiousness and the things that boys naturally bring into a household, especially if they were raised without brothers themselves.
Well, I had one brother, but still, our boys' activity and noise was a surprise to me.
Hmm.
I'm not a boy.
No.
I'm a girl, and I'm a pretty boyish boy. I was a tomboy, and I like a lot of boy things. I think mm-hmm. the Lord made me to be a mom of boys.
Absolutely. I think that's that. Yes, I see that all over.
Yeah, I spent this afternoon reading Force 10 from Navarone and thoroughly enjoying it.
Yeah, that's true. Well, as a former boy, I wasn't quite as surprised at what they brought into our home when we first had our first children. But, I do remember there came a point where I started to realize maybe everybody around us wasn't comfortable with this.
Oh, yeah, that came pretty early. In fact, I will never forget when I went to the shoe store shortly after our third child was born. And we're trying on things and we're talking. And this older couple comes up to me and says, "Oh, is it a boy or a girl?" And I said, "It's a boy." I was so excited. He was just a beautiful baby.
Mm-hmm.
Still a handsome young man.
Right.
And they said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I bet you were crushed."
Wow.
Oh, I was so angry. I have a hot temper. I had a really hard time controlling my mouth at that point.
Wow.
If they hadn't been so elderly, there's no telling what would have happened.
Yeah.
But, I realized that to much of our world, having a boy is not just challenging or even sometimes inconvenient, but they see it as almost a tragedy. And mm-hmm. that really upsets me.
Yeah, it really does. And we saw that when we had three boys and four boys and five boys, it seemed to become more pronounced some ways. But I think one thing that really clued me in was I remember you had an opportunity to go to a local college and hear Christina Hoff Summers. Do you remember that?
Oh, I sure do.
I think she had just come out with The War on Boys.
Yeah, The War on Boys, How mm-hmm. Feminism is Destroying Our... I forget the subtitle. Anyway, mm-hmm. it was What Feminism is Doing to Our Boys.
Right.
And when she started talking, I realized, this is more than just people's reaction to my sons,
mm-hmm.
but that we had a culture-wide problem that didn't value masculinity at all, much less biblical masculinity.
Right. And, as the years now have gone by, because that's been quite a few years, we've seen that illustrated over and over again, and not just in the way that people react and kind of expect the bull in the china shop when we brought several boys into a store, but just as we see the clues in our culture around us. I mean, like, for example, something I read a while back, it was pointed out that sociologists and a psychologist, they say that there's five things that you look for when somebody's transitioning from their childhood state at home to being a fully independent adult.
That's right. There's five mm-hmm. kind of thresholds of adulthood.
Right.
You finish your education.
Right.
You leave home.
Mm-hmm.
Get a job.
Mm-hmm.
Find a wife and start a family.
Yeah. And a generation ago, back in the early 70s...
Hey, now the 70s, yeah, that was a high point in American culture, right?
Oh, yeah, right after the free love generation and Watergate and all of those wonderful things that were happening culturally then.
No, it wasn't.
But,
no.
But you know what? Even at that time, like something like 74% of young men, by the time they reached age 30, had done all of those things. They had settled down and become functioning members of the society of men. They were among the grown-ups.
Now it's less than a third.
Right.
And you know, some of this, you look at the culture and you think, yeah, it's much harder to make it than it used to be.
Right.
But this change started happening before the culture, before the economy tanked out. And there's a lot of it that's not trackable to the economy. It's trackable to a change in the culture for boys.
Well, okay, now here, another statistic. We were reading an article a while back, I think in one of the news magazines. I can't remember which one. But they were talking about the shift in the demographic balance of the colleges and universities.
Yes.
And I remember they actually highlighted the University of North Carolina, close by where we live, and had pointed out that at UNC Chapel Hill, the flagship of the whole system in our state, that it was something like 60 to 64% of the students were women.
Yeah, that was a real surprise to me. But then I started thinking about it, I realized, you know, I've seen this myself. I love reading the wedding announcements.
Right.
Hey, I'm a girl.
Right.
Okay, I just love reading about everybody's dresses and things. And I noticed that when I first started reading them, long before we were married, when I was in high school, that generally, when they described what the bride and the groom were doing with their lives, that generally the groom had kind of a career-directed orientation, and the bride a little bit less so. And then that started changing, and then it was pretty much even. But now it's shifted the other way. In the past 10 years, I've noticed it's moved to where the bride tends to have a career-oriented lifestyle, and the groom does not. And that really surprised me because, you know, biblically, it is the husband's responsibility to provide for the family.
Right, right. It is. And I've seen that shift. And, you know, all right, we talk about family life, okay? Making that last step into finding your mate and establishing your own family, your own parenthood, and the rest of that.
That's changed, too.
Yes, it has.
I looked at the census records on this.
You did? Okay.
And dating back as long as we have census records in this country, generally, young men have gotten married around 21 to 23. For young ladies, it's been 19 to 21.
Okay.
You know, for 200 years.
Okay.
Until the past generation.
Yeah, I remember seeing a trend line on that. It looks like about 1975 or so, that number started going up pretty dramatically. And now...
Now it's on a huge upward curve.
Well, it's something like the last numbers I saw said that it's 29 years plus is the average age that young men are getting married.
For the first time, yes.
For the first time, they're almost... It's starting to nudge over into the 30s before people make their first marriage.
And how old are the young women?
And the young women are like 27 at this point.
Wow.
They're following...
That's a huge change.
That's a big shift in a generation.
And yet that concerns me biblically too. Because, you know, it talks about the wife of your youth, the children of your youth. And biblically, youth lasts from, you know, 12 or 13 to 30.
Right.
We're getting to the point that people aren't going to know the wife. Aren't going to have a wife of their youth or children of their youth.
Yeah, really. That's true. And, you know, the other things going on, where do you see a breakdown of the expectation of male responsibility?
Wow.
How about the illegitimacy rate in our country, the incident of unwed births? Now, what does that imply? Well, that implies a bunch of things, but one of them is absent fathers.
Yeah.
There's not a husband in the picture. There's not a man who stepped up to take responsibility. And now, for a large segment of our population, it's not just a little splinter or certain community, but a large segment of our population, over 50% of the babies born in that generation are born without a father in the home.
Yeah, women under 30, over 50%.
Yeah.
are born illegitimately. And
yeah.
You know, in some populations, over 70% of all children born are born illegitimately.
Yeah.
And you know, where are the fathers?
Right.
You know, why aren't they fulfilling their responsibilities? Mm-hmm. You know, something is wrong with manhood in America.
There's been a big cultural shift. And on the one hand, there's a shift of lowering expectations and increasing permissions. You know, that once there was a social stigma to fathering a child out of wedlock. There was a social requirement that, you know, you're supposed to step up and if not just simply provide for the child, you really should step in there, marry the mom, and do your duty.
Right.
That seems to have gone away now.
Yeah, it really does.
And
is this freedom?
Well, it's license is what it is.
But it is, and you know what upsets me the most is it hurts the children the most.
That was my second point because, you know, these young men are growing up in a fatherless home or an unstable home where mom is the only constant, but men kind of come and go out of the picture. What kind of example and expectation do they have? They're not getting a cultural leadership that's telling them this is your duty.
You know, I was reading today practically every negative outcome for mm-hmm. raising a child.
Yeah.
Runaways, suicides, jail.
Right.
Dropouts, practically every negative outcome is dramatically higher when the father's not in the home.
Wow. Wow. I remember years ago hearing a speaker at a homeschooling convention. I forget now what his last name was, so I won't quote him. But I remember he used the illustration of what happens in elephant herds if there's not a strong male in the picture, that the young males tend to go rogue. They become unruly, destructive, you know, the elephants become poorly socialized without a bull elephant in the picture. And, you know, if it's happening in their society, we see it happening in our society.
Bull elephants around here.
Yeah, we need somebody to go trumpet to the herd. Well, you know, okay, there's some things happening too. You know, these young men are not getting married, and a lot of them have given up a hope of achieving anything in their career or educationally. You know, one of the things that we are seeing is a rise of addiction, and not drug addiction, but some things almost as bad.
Really? You know, the rate of pornography addiction has been just absolutely shocking to me.
And I think it's important to point out, a lot of times I would have pushed back when somebody said, oh, it's an addiction. But really, you saw some research recently that said that people who become habituated to using pornography.
Yeah, it was research at the University of Cambridge in England.
Uh-huh.
And it said that for habitual pornography use, internet pornography, okay, because you can see so many images so fast that it feeds a dopamine cycle in your brain where the receptors shut down.
That's one of the pleasure hormones.
Yeah, it's one of the pleasure hormones, and it's so much of it is produced that the receptors start shutting down, so you're tempted to watch more or worse stuff to get an even higher hormone surge, and that shuts down more receptors.
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple of results of that. One of them is there's an epidemic in impotence among young men.
Right.
When they do decide to settle down and get married, they can't respond to a real woman.
Right.
Another very terrifying sequel to this is that it seems to react the exact same way in our brains as an alcohol or heroin addiction.
Wow.
Wow, indeed.
And university studies are showing again and again that 85-90% and more of young men in our 18 to 20s, 18 to 30s age range are not only exposed to pornography, but have become frequent habitual users of it. That is really having an impact. But you know what?
I think we
need to point out something, that there is hope.
Yes.
That there's still hope. That all of this negative news, and basically it tells us this, the culture of manhood is crumbling. And there's not the support and there's not the example, but yet there is definitely hope available. And that's what we want to talk about.
Yeah, we want to talk about, you know, what guidance does the Word of God give us on biblical manhood?
Right.
What does God expect us to do as parents in raising our boys? What does God expect you to do, young men, as far as serving Him as a man?
That's right. And, you know, that's the awesome thing, because we serve a God who doesn't change. Yeah. He has an unchanging word that is just as relevant in the 21st century as it was in the first century and earlier than that. So we want to talk about some practical things about understanding our sons and understanding how we can cooperate with God in raising them up to become the young men that God would have them to be. All right. So let's talk about that when we come back after the break, shall we?
Sure. Hang on with us.
It's not always easy having sons. Teenage boys put away a startling amount of groceries. Younger boys can be downright destructive. They're noisy, unconcerned with hygiene, and the dog has a longer attention span. Or so it seems, some days. If these are God's chosen gifts to us, and we believe that they are, then why does it seem so hard? How can we prepare these boys to serve God when we can barely make it through the day? Isn't there a better way? The answer is yes. Raising Real Men, Surviving, Teaching, and Appreciating Boys by Hal and Melanie Young is a practical, award-winning guide to equipping the hearts and minds of boys without breaking or losing your own. John Rosemond says, "This is just what the doctor ordered for parents who want to raise capable Christian men of character." Raising Real Men by Hal and Melanie Young. Visit them on the web at raisingrealmen.com. Brought to you by Great Waters Press.
Well, hi. Go ahead.
Welcome back to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
Yes, that's right. I'm Hal.
I'm Melanie.
Okay.
And sometimes we do get our wires crossed. People think that somehow we plan everything we say because we don't usually do that.
No, but sometimes we do. So, and you know, we do want to say, we promise you, we will be transparent and real. And that gets us off the hook because you're going to hear background noises. You're going to hear little fumbling around sometimes, a little juggling and improvisation, and that's okay because we're real parents and this is real life.
And we want to welcome you into our real family. Mm-hmm. In fact, you missed something exciting during the station break. Hal hit the wrong button. There was a scree on the speakers and the dogs came running in here with a desperate look. Uh-huh. I think they would have done anything for you, Hal, if you'd promised never to do that again.
That's true. That feedback loop was just the right frequency for our dog's ears. Okay. So
when we left, we were talking about the sad state that manhood has gotten into our culture, but that there's biblical help.
There really is. And we don't ever want to lose sight of that, because even if the mountains fall into the sea, God promises that He is here with us. Jesus said He'll never leave us nor forsake us, and that includes us in our family life and in all the challenges of raising our sons to become real men.
I think one of the biggest challenges is a lot of things our boys do are inconvenient or annoying, mm-hmm. and for me as a mom, I have to remember what I want them to become.
Right.
Because,
right.
see, a lot of the things that God has placed in them, mm-hmm. the manly virtues,
yeah.
are really in the rough when they're boys, mm-hmm. but they, my job is to teach them, to disciple them and discipline them,
yeah.
to self-control, to submit them to Christ, to use them in the right way,
yeah.
but not to extinguish them.
Well, there's a twofold problem there. On the first hand, you know, we're all subject to the effects of original sin. We all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and that includes that sweet little baby boy. But on the other hand, you know, God gives them to us as an unfinished package with all of this stuff in seed form, and it's our job to train it and cultivate it and make it something beautiful, and yet, you know, when we first get it, it's pretty rough-edged and immature.
Well, for example, you know, right. I want you as my husband to be ambitious and bold,
right.
and, you know, to go out and take risks where necessary.
Yeah.
But an 11-year-old boy, that looks like jumping off the roof of something yelling, "Hey, Mom, watch this."
Yeah. Boy, the battle cry of the boy. That's it.
Yeah. And so, yeah, the struggle is between my desire to keep him safe,
mm-hmm.
but also my desire to see him become a strong Christian man.
Well, that's kind of the trick. That's the finesse we put in as parents. We're trying to not to squelch these things, but we want to train them and cultivate them and guide them into constructive use so that when our young men are grown up, they're not passive and weak and indecisive, but rather they know where their strength and their power lies and how to harness it and not be driven by it and not be frightened by it.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
And it's been kind of sad as we have gone around speaking about this and have had our book, how many men have told us that they're really not comfortable with the manly virtues themselves?
That was a surprise. I didn't expect that. Because frankly, a lot of our readers are moms.
Yes.
You know, we meet them at conferences and church meetings and such, and it's plain this mom has, especially when that young guy has reached the transitional ages, like 9 to 12, when suddenly he's not the compliant little boy that he was, and he's become something different and unruly, and she's having a hard time figuring out how to manage. And yet, you're right. I remember several distinct conversations of men that have come up and said, "Thank you so much. I understand what God wants me to become, not just my son, but me personally."
Yeah.
So, you know what? There's never a better time to start. There's never a better time to learn.
Let's talk about some of those manly virtues and the way we see them in our boys and what they're there for.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the first things that impacts people and the surroundings is just the amount of energy they've got.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the activity level.
I wish I had a little bit of it.
Wow.
You know, sometimes they move nonstop.
Yeah.
They're noisy. And this isn't every boy. And we're going to talk about that in the last segment. But on the whole, boys are noisy and active.
That's it. And, you know, we've made the observation that when girls are quiet, that means everything is sweetness and light. And if there's boys in the house and it gets quiet, somebody better go check, because there could be something afoot.
Or maybe it's just our genes, because you know what?
What?
Our girls are kind of that way, too.
Well, they've got the influence of 6 older brothers.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah, but anyway, you know what? I think a key to this, and the key to so much of this, is just understanding that a lot of this behavior that you see that kind of may startle you sometimes is normal.
Yeah, that was a big one for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just didn't realize that, you know, it's normal for a boy to have trouble sitting down and working on schoolwork for several hours.
Uh-huh.
You know, I thought, well, of course you sit here till your work is done. And, you know, but by the time a couple of hours have passed, most little boys are spending all their energy sitting still, and there's nothing left to learn with.
Right. Yeah.
And so that was a surprise to me that, you know, actually they learn better if they get up and move around and come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Take that into account. And, you know, here's another thing that people ask us about a lot of times. How about aggression? You know, my son always wants to wrestle and roughhouse, and he wants to, if he's not actually fighting, he's pretending to fight, and they're fascinated by military stuff. And
like every once in a while, I have a mom come up to me at our book fair table when we're speaking at a conference.
Yeah.
And she'll say, I remember one mom particularly used the right terminology, and it kind of freaked me out. She said, can I talk to you privately?
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah, certainly. And she said, I'm afraid my son is going to become a psychopath.
Oh my, that's serious.
Yeah, my eyebrows went up and I thought, no, what is he? You know, is he torturing animals or something?
Right,
you know?
Right.
And I said, well, what would make you think that? And my mother's training and being unflappable helped.
Yeah.
And she said, well, see, he always wants to play war.
Uh-huh.
And he pretends to kill other people, and he pretends to die himself.
Yes.
I had a hard time not laughing.
Right.
I've been there, done that. And okay. I told her, you know, you don't understand.
Uh-huh.
When you and I think about war, we think about widows and orphans. And our sons returning home broken or wounded or even not making it home.
Right.
I said, when your son thinks about war.
Oh, it's entirely different because, you know, a young man thinks of war and he thinks duty, honor, country, glory, and big explosions and really neat hardware and victory. And you know, we might die, but man, oh, it's going to be so cool to have all of this, you know. that whole mortality thing just doesn't click with a young man.
No.
And I remember, when did I really start to think about real mortality? I think I was probably about 35, to be honest. You know, you recognize it's out there, but it's not for me yet.
I think I was 12 when I started thinking about it.
Right. Well, you know what? I think that's part of God made them that way because they are called on to defend the weak and the helpless.
Yes, because we need protectors.
Right.
Women and children, we need somebody to protect us.
Yeah.
And see, I love that God put that in our boys, that desire to protect. Now, okay, it's in seed form.
Yeah.
And he's a little sinner.
Yeah.
And so it's really easy for that aggressiveness that God meant to be used for protection. Mm-hmm. To become bullying or pesting and...
Or just plain careless.
Or just careless. There's a lot of that.
They don't recognize other people's feelings at a young age. They don't realize there's another perspective.
And then when they get bigger, they don't recognize their strength.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we've seen... Yeah.
It about broke my heart one time when two of our teenagers hadn't seen each other for a while, one had been traveling, and they grabbed each other in a manly hug, and that manly hug became a little bit of a playful struggle, and they landed on one of my chairs and broke it. And they did not mean to.
It's not
and
like
they were crushed and upset when they done it.
It's not like they were throwing furniture around, but understand, you know, our guy's top 6 feet. When they get to be about 13 or 14 years old, some of them.
Yeah.
And so we're not talking an inconsequential mass of manhood there running around.
No, if you've seen our boys, they're football players. They're huge.
They're big guys, yeah. And so, yeah, all of those things come into it. And, you know, we don't want to squelch that, but we want to understand it and to cooperate with it. And work with it, because it's a powerful thing that God's creating in our sons.
It's a powerful thing, and it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. It just has to be turned to Christ like everything else.
That's true. Well, you know, one thing that we find true, I mean, not just the aggression, not just the energy, but this determination. Some people call it stubbornness. Other people call it, no, it's leadership. You know, but there's a bunch of different ways you can see that. But it really comes down to that desire to exert the will. And to control things.
To be in charge.
Yeah, they want to be in charge.
And again, men are supposed to be leaders. They're supposed to be providers and protectors.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be leaders. They're supposed to lead in their homes. They're supposed to lead in their churches and their nations.
They need the persistence to control themselves even.
Yes.
And, you know, that. And how do you teach that? Now, that's a good question. You know, look at the example of Jesus Christ. And now, oh, what a great example he always is.
Yeah.
But, you know, to say he is the Son of God, he is the judge who will rule over all, and yet for a time he placed himself in a subordinate position, and even in Scripture it says even the Lord Jesus Christ learned obedience for a time. And, you know, I think that's where we have to work with our sons to say, son, I want you to be a leader, but the best leaders have learned to obey.
And they obey their mama.
And to serve.
And they obey their daddy, and they serve their mama and daddy.
That's right.
And, you know, a lot of people get that wrong.
Yeah.
They think that in order to raise leaders, you have to allow them to make all their own decisions from the time they're children. That's not true.
Ooh, that could be disastrous.
Yeah, it could be really disastrous. Instead, they need to learn to obey and honor and respect their parents and the other authorities in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you develop leadership then?
Well, first, you teach them to be servants. You teach them to be responsible with chores. You teach them to...
Responsibility, I think that's it.
Well, that's it. And recognizing that there's consequences to not doing your duty.
Yep.
And allow them to experience some consequences from time to time.
And, you know, I think that's key, is giving them responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's really where we exercise leadership. You know, what does it mean to be an adult? It means to do what you're supposed to do without anybody telling you, even if nobody tells you to.
That's right.
It means to be mature enough to take responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where leadership is founded, on taking responsibility.
You know, also, I think inculcating a spirit of service.
Yes.
To say, you know what, young man, you are strong for a purpose. You should be looking for an opportunity to use your strength to serve others, like your mom, like the women in the church. You know, I love seeing a young guy rushing forward to hold the door for the ladies who are entering a church or customer and a store ahead of them. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk about how do we civilize these young guys.
So hang on and stay with us.
Welcome back. This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal
and Melanie,
and we are glad to have you. We were talking about raising real men, and in the previous segment, we were talking about how do you deal with the unruliness and the chaos that boys can introduce into your family. Well, you know, part of it is this process of civilization. This is something that we have to kind of put back onto our young guys and get them up to speed with what it means to be a functioning member of a civilized society and to understand what the biblical ethic they should be living by is.
You know, I think the very most important part of that is introducing our sons to Jesus Christ.
Right.
Is discipling them in the faith, because, you know, that's really the foundation of civilization is recognizing the one who created it.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, like everything else in society, I think the church struggles with this today. You know, so many of our churches have really gone to a model which I would say is almost a feminine model of our relationship to God.
Like many of the worship songs we sing are very emotional.
Yeah.
And when you compare that to the hymns of the past, the hymns of the past were more intellectual, more challenging, more militant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had more images of war and of battle and of loyalty, and they were much more masculine. And when I compare that to much of the modern, and not all, but modern worship music, I can see where a boy could think, you know, this isn't for me.
Yeah, a lot of those choruses, and sometimes we sing some of them in our church too. I mean, we're not holding up some unattainable ideal, but you know, I know that some of them are very much about the emotional feelings we have for the Lord. And you know, frankly, some days we don't have feelings, but we never lose our duty. We never lose the call to serve and to fight and to struggle to overcome. And so, you know, I think about some of the hymns, and they don't have to be ancient hymns, but things like Onward Christian Soldiers. Everybody knows that.
Faith is the victory.
Sure. Or Stand Up for Jesus, or Rise Up, O Men of God. You know, so many of our hymn books have kind of taken the manhood out of it.
Some of them have very intentionally removed manhood and removed the word man.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I find that concerning because, you know, there's no male nor female in Christ Jesus. We all belong to Him.
Right.
And He created us male and female.
Right.
You know, He wants us to be the way that He created us.
Yeah.
And so I think we have to really work to give our sons a full picture of who Jesus Christ is.
That's right. Because, we all get the Good Shepherd. Okay. And that's biblical.
And it's awesome. And it's very comforting.
Right. And the church is very good teaching that. But we need to remember that Jesus Christ is the judge.
The King of Kings.
That He is the prophet, and He is the one who willingly embraced a death by torture on behalf of people who didn't yet believe in Him.
Now that's a man.
That is manhood. He died. He didn't die for the innocent. He died for guilty people.
Yeah.
And yet He was willing to do that in full knowledge of every stroke of the hammer, every stroke of the whip that He would feel. And so, you know, the courage, just the moral courage, the physical courage, the physical strength, the determination, as well as the righteousness and the holiness of our Lord Jesus Christ. We need to be explaining all of this to our sons, because a real man is both righteous and just and strong, and also gentle and humble.
And compassionate.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, I love that. I think we need to teach our boys that who Jesus is and what the law is, and how that they are lawbreakers.
Right.
You know, that they are outlaws and that they need to repent of their sin and trust in Jesus to save them.
Right.
Because, you know, it's something that's the most important thing in their whole lives. Mm-hmm. And if they don't get a clear picture of that, then we've failed as parents. We're going to be talking about that next week, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Next week's guest, and we'll be introducing that toward the end of the program. But, you know, that in a nutshell, we got to remember, church is not for sissies. Church is not a womanly thing. It is a Christian thing, and it is a very manly thing if you're coming to it as a man. Yeah. And so we've got to be sure that if we're in a church that tends to go for the touchy-feely effect, maybe we need to be giving counterexamples. Missionary stories. You want to look at somebody like David Livingston?
Yeah.
You want to look at somebody like Hudson Taylor? You know, these were not men of soft and meek temperament who lived lives on a cushion somewhere. Right. Or lives of seclusion, but they were men who faced incredible physical danger with their eyes wide open because they loved the Lord and they loved the people they served. What could be more manly than that?
Okay. Right. You know, so the first part of civilization is we need to civilize them in the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's other things too, like school. How do we get school done?
Yeah, and unfortunately, a modern day school situation is a real tragedy for young men because they're so... The effort to try to manage large groups of unrelated children becomes a crowd management situation, and frankly, boys are hard to manage in crowds. And so what gets rewarded is the more feminine traits of being quiet.
Being able to sit still for a long time.
Being able to sit still and make small motor motions at an early age. And
things, you know, boys aren't real good at.
That's right, and it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with the boys.
No, and a lot of things boys are good at are discouraged. You know, boys love competition. They love to try their strength, whether it's mental strength or physical strength. They love to try their strength against someone else.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to do that in the schools anymore. They've gotten rid of competition. In fact, I read today.
What?
They said one of the colleges is doing a push, no more success stories. They don't want to label people as successes and tell success stories because that might make people feel bad.
Oh, two cheers for us. We're all mediocre together.
Yeah, wow.
Wow.
Talk about a way to make a young man tune out. You know?
What's the point?
What is the point? That's what the guys are going to say. And so what are some ways we can reach them with school? Well, one thing I really wish I'd understood.
What?
Is guys and girls develop differently.
Yeah.
And... girls develop those small motor skills and things much earlier than guys.
Mm-hmm.
Guys really come into their own intellectually in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I wish somebody had explained that to me because it was neat to me to see even our boys who had very, very little interest in school, in middle school, in high school, they were flying along.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, you know, one thing about to change of train of thought here. But, you know, the whole thing with schooling, we are on a homeschool radio network here. You may not be a homeschooler, okay? And we would never say that home education is the only way or that it is the way that God commands.
That's right.
It's not. But we have found it's very effective with boys, and it counters a lot of the trouble that they have in the institutional setting.
Yeah, you know, we really like that you can accommodate that desire to get up and move. That if they do a better writing big than writing small, let them use a whiteboard.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of opportunities to be flexible and to meet their needs where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can do things like introduce competition.
Right.
Let your boys see, even if they're on different grade levels, see who can finish their math lesson soonest.
Oh, yeah. Or you can race against the clock. You try to beat your best score. Or you can set goals, challenges. You know, when you do that, though, it's really important to celebrate the success.
Yes.
You know, because I remember we made this mistake with our first son, that he was a precocious reader, and he was good at math at an early age. And so being home educators and ambitious ourselves, we just pushed him right along. As soon as he got a concept, go to the next one. And after about 4 or 5 years, he was like 2 years ahead of his grade group in math. But he was convinced he was no good at it because it was always difficult. And we realized, well, it was because we never got to a point and said, wow, that's great. Let's take some time off and celebrate that you have achieved this level of success or finished this book or whatever it was.
Because he couldn't look around at the other kids in his class and say, hey, I'm doing a lot better than they are.
Exactly. So we got to be sure that challenge them, because boys will rise to the challenge. But celebrate success and achievement, because they need that. It affirms to them, yes, you're making progress and you're doing well.
You know, one thing we probably ought to talk about with guys is that transition to adulthood.
Oh, boy.
You know, from the time they're 12 or 13, you really need to be thinking hard that you're raising a man. And you want him to be independent. You want him to be able to stand alone for Christ.
And you know what? They're not birds. You can't kick them out of the nest at 18 and expect them to fly.
Not if they haven't had any experience flying at all before then.
No.
And so you've got to look for opportunities for them to be independent and look for opportunities for them to make their own decision. You got to give them a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. And that's where the chore thing comes in.
Yes.
You know, and give them consequences if they don't keep up.
Encourage them to start businesses.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to get a job. You know, because one thing I see a lot of parents really goofing up on this is they wait till their guys are mature enough to allow them to do things. Now, that sounds contradictory to everything we've said. What I mean is guys rise to the challenge.
Right.
And if he hasn't had to be mature enough, he won't be.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so if you want your son to become more mature, give him a responsibility that stretches him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll be honored, first of all, that you trusted him to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he will strive to please you and to earn that respect, and he'll rise to the occasion.
You know what, too? I think if we push them just a little bit harder than they're comfortable being, that not only will they make progress, but they'll become accustomed to feeling a little bit uncertain.
Okay, and they start asking for advice.
That's one big benefit, because then they'll think, well, I need to look for somebody with wisdom or expertise to help me understand. But also, that feeling of uncertainty when they get into a new situation won't throw them over. Because, I remember being uncertain before, and there's a way out of here. I just got to keep calm and find some advice.
Some counsel.
Yeah. You know, because if everything has been handed to them, then the first time there's a question, they may be adrift. And
I
want them to deal with hard questions and sometimes to deal with situations they haven't seen before and let them work through it.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, the neat thing about it is to see what happens when you raise your guys like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a lot of people have heard us say before, you know, an 11-year-old needs a benevolent dictator.
Yeah.
Badly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a 19-year-old needs a trusted advisor. And when you start pushing them into bearing responsibility and then reaching back and asking for advice, you make a very natural transition into being that trusted advisor. And it's been neat to me to see, we have 3 adult sons now, and to see them call home and say, hey, I need some advice. There's this issue going on at school. And I say, well, you know, you're an adult. You got to make your decisions. I know you can handle this. And they say, I know that, but I just want to hear what you think I should do, because, you know, I really value what you've got to say.
Uh-huh.
Win.
Yeah, that's a blessing. And, you know, this is a funny thing. We have friends who are very control-oriented. They're very directive, even to their young adults. And there's a lot of pushback from their young adults. You know, they want to be independent and make their own choices. Well, we found with our guys, because we've given them a longer period of transition and expected them to make decisions and sometimes to make mistakes, but we'll help them work it through. Well, when they do call back for advice and we say, you know, I think this is how I probably would handle it. Oftentimes they say, yeah, you know, that's kind of what I decided too. That's sort of what I was thinking. And we find that oftentimes they make the same choices that we would have guided them to make. Because after all, we train them.
They feel like they can without being disrespected as a man.
That's right. And they don't have something to prove
by
pushing away and running off and seeking counsel in bad places.
And that sure makes a more pleasant transition to adulthood. You know, I've really been pleased that our older sons are, you know, our friends.
Yeah.
We enjoy being with them. We enjoy interacting with them. And, you know, do value our counsel, and that's important to me. I really appreciate that.
I do too. Well, look, when we come back, we're going to talk about a really sensitive subject. We're going to talk about purity and how we maintain that.
Welcome back to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. In tonight's episode, we've been discussing raising real men.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with those boys?
That's right. And you know, one thing that people have always asked about whenever we talk about it is the issue of purity. How do we teach our boys about relationships between boys and girls, men and women, about sexuality, and about maintaining a moral lifestyle?
Well, I guess so, after the statistics we talked about earlier in the program.
Well, obviously,
that's enough to make your toes curl.
Yeah, the culture's doing a really crummy job, and of course, the culture's really undermining most of this teaching anyway.
Well, and what scares me is I think a lot of Christian families are very, very naive. They're in denial about how widespread this issue is.
Yeah.
You know, as we travel, we stay with families oftentimes as we travel, and it has shocked me the number of people who have no protection on their internet service at all.
Yeah, no filters, no blocking, or even accountability, which, you know, yeah. The accountability software is the kind of thing we recommend, because as we're making that transition into adulthood, we need to be teaching our young men how to discern good from evil and to choose good. And part of that means giving them a choice and teaching them. Not blocking it all out and sealing it off, but rather to say, this is out here, son. You need to understand it is a trap for your feet.
I love the accountability software because, you know, it makes them think, do I want to click on this? Because if I click on this, somebody's going to know on Thursday when that email goes out.
That's right.
Do I really want to answer questions about clicking on this?
Because after you've lived with that sort of accountability for a while, you naturally start to think, somebody's going to know.
And see, God always knows.
Right.
And we want to teach our children to be always thinking, someone knows, someone in heaven knows.
That's right. You know, I think a real key to this, and this was one of the things, we actually ended up doing a regular one-hour workshop just on this subject alone, because so many parents, especially the mothers, don't realize how early the temptations start for young men.
Well, you know, the latest research is showing that the first exposure to internet pornography is often at 9 or 10 years old.
Well, yeah, and the onset of puberty is earlier and earlier, so they're getting, those hormones are starting to surge, and those feelings are starting way before they're mentally ready to deal with them.
Oh, yeah, you know, puberty's now happening at 11 or 12.
Can you imagine that? I mean,
yeah.
And it's been getting earlier and earlier for a whole bunch of reasons, but regardless of why, just the fact that it's there, we've got to be talking about this. I'm reading a book right now, and maybe we can do a review of it later, but one of the things I appreciate about it, it's about the talk. And he says right up front, the talk does not happen one time.
No.
It doesn't happen on a certain date or a special weekend. It happens over years.
That's
it's
right.
Really a lifestyle. And we know we need to be talking to our sons about sexuality, purity, the changes happening in their body, the temptations they're feeling. We need to be upfront about it.
Yeah, we need to start early, and we need to give them some direction. You know, in our family, we've taught our children not to just seek out, you know, feminine companionship, our boys, not to seek out feminine companionship for entertainment, you know, not to fall into the dating culture, but to wait till they're pretty much ready to seek a mate before they start looking, looking for one.
Yeah, I think it's friendship is a very important thing.
Yeah.
And friendship between guys and girls. I mean, we can testify, you can be platonic friends. We were for years before we realized that there was something more. But it's not getting that pursuit of romance, I think, is a better
term. Yeah.
It's not that important whether they go to get a cup of coffee after church or something.
Sharing coffee is not a seduction.
That's right. Yeah. But the idea of I want a girlfriend, I want a romantic partner, that's something you need to hold off until you're ready to support a wife. And that's a culture that we try to get in, people to recognize that, there's something really wonderful about our counterpart on the other side of the gender divide.
Yeah.
And we need to respect it and honor it and, yes, enjoy it properly and not seek to make it something it shouldn't be in a time when you're not ready to do what God would have you to do.
Before we talk about other things, we probably need to tell them the accountability service we use on internet for our family is Covenant Eyes.
Right.
That's covenanteyes.com.
Yes.
And if you put in Raising Real Men, one word, no caps, as the discount code, you can try it free for a month. And listen, we do not want you to be one of those families that calls us or messages us with a desperate situation because they didn't get around to putting it on there.
Yeah.
Get protection on your computers tonight. Computers, iPhones, iPads, Nexuses, every internet-capable device in your house.
Mm-hmm. That is quite so. It's very important, and it's not expensive, and it can... Oh, it is so important. Well, look, let's...
I told him we would talk about... What about if your son isn't the typical boy?
Meaning he's not rough and tumble.
He's emotional.
That's an important thing because sometimes when we go to say we're going to talk about real manhood, folks picture a big hairy beast who wrestles alligators for fun and eats nails for breakfast.
But an art historian who stands up boldly for what is true art and what is honoring to God is just as much a man as alligator wrestler, maybe more.
That's right. I mean, there's a call for manly traits in every career field. And it doesn't matter if your career field is as an arc welder in a shipyard or if you're a professional cake decorator.
Right.
There's times when you've got to exercise integrity, courage, persistence, diligence. All of those traits, they apply to being a man. Don't get hung up on this. Well, my boy's just not rough like that. Well, you know what? But there are some things to be aware of that you want to be careful to train them not to send the wrong signals by their body language or their mannerisms.
And that's challenging because sometimes these guys who are quieter and more sensitive are really easier for us moms to manage. And as a result, we can feminize them some. And that's kind of dangerous in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
So, you want to be careful about that. You want to teach them manly mannerisms, and you want to praise the manly virtues in them. So they're content in their manhood, and they see themselves as men. So when he stands up and he shows courage at the maybe it's an art competition, and he says, "No, I will not participate in this because what this is showing is something sinful. I can't do that." Then you praise him with the manly virtues. "Son, I was incredibly proud of your courage. It took tremendous courage to stand up there and say that. You are really learning how to be courageous like a man."
And I tell you what, if you have never stood up on an auditorium stage and played a musical instrument by yourself in public, that takes courage.
It does.
You can praise that. And it's not, it's not rough and tumble and wearing shoulder pads, but it's something that requires preparation and persistence in all the routines going up to it, and then the willingness to master your own butterflies and to your own shyness and get out there and do what you got to do. So, all of those things, you can put it in the manly terms, but I think about like that young man that you saw at the pool one day, who was raised in a family with several sisters and his mother, and being homeschooled, he was surrounded by women all day long. And you know what? When he would sit down on a beach towel, he would properly fold his legs up
over
underneath
to the side.
Over to the side, just
like his sister, like his mama
like his
did. And
yeah.
And it sent the wrong signal,
Right.
And that's easy to correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the mom just says, you know what? I don't let you pick your nose in public. Men don't sit there like, don't sit like that in public in a discussion. You don't have to make a big deal about it.
That's true. That's well, yeah. Well said. Well said. I like that.
Some other questions.
Yes.
People always ask us, what about playing with guns? Do you let your children play with toy guns?
Yeah. Emphasize toy guns, right? Yeah.
We'll talk about other guns later.
You know what? This is, yes. I will say unequivocally yes. And this is why. Because guns are a tool and they are used righteously or unrighteously or safely or unsafely. But that depends on the operator. It's not about the tool. And so we want our young people to understand, how do you handle a gun safely?
Mm-hmm.
And we want to understand there are proper uses for it. For not just for recreational use, which is perfectly fine, but for hunting, providing for a family.
For chasing down counterfeiters, for capturing pirates.
For enforcing justice or protecting the weak or innocent or defending your country. All of those things use weapons. In fact, it's a controlled use of violence for righteous means. And guess what? In a few short years, your young men will be old enough to serve as game wardens or park rangers or policemen or soldiers. In roles where that might be part of their daily work. And so, you know, I want our sons to feel comfortable with that. And if they don't ever choose to go shoot something, that's fine. But it's not something that we need to shudder and draw away from and say, ooh, I'm scared of guns and I want my son to grow up scared of guns like me.
No, you know what? He's really safer if he knows how they're properly used. And one of the ways they're not properly used is pointing them at your brother.
Right.
And, you know, so we teach them, you don't shoot at your brothers. You never have a reason to need protection from your brother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so when you teach them some basic things, yeah, it's a fun part. Now, sometimes they abuse it. They get taken away for a time.
Sure. We have disarmaments. We have armistice periods occasionally. Yeah. But, you know, all of that, you don't have to be afraid of it. There's just a way to teach it, okay? Well, let's see. Now,
rough play and what becomes bullying. I'll tell you, I've got an easy rule on this.
What's that?
If somebody says stop and you don't stop, you're in trouble.
You know what? There's a rule among fighter pilots when they're in training situations,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, they're in a dogfight simulation. That's how they train for actual combat.
Huh.
But if anyone in the formation calls knock it off, there's an immediate break off.
Oh, okay? I like that.
Everybody stops, okay? You separate, you move the planes apart into safe distance, and then you sort out what the problem is, okay? And so a call to knock it off should be something everybody agrees. Okay, we stop.
Yeah. Because boys, again, like to try their strength against each other. There's not a problem with some wrestling and roughhousing.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody says knock it off and you don't, you're a bully.
That's right. Then you are using your strength to try to dominate somebody else for your own pleasure. And that is wrong. So we don't allow that.
It's not allowed.
No, it is not. Well, look, we've got just a couple of minutes. Let's
talk about next week.
Next week. This is really neat. We've got an interview next week with Dennis Gunderson. He is the author of Your Child's Profession of Faith. It's a book. He didn't write The Faith for Your Child. But it's a great discussion about sharing the gospel with our children and then understanding how they respond.
That's right.
And understanding what's really going on in their hearts, as near as we can tell, and how are they communicating that to the world around them. Because, you know, when you come to a church and a child says, I've been saved, you know what? The pastor has the right to expect the same kind of thing from him that he would expect from an older believer.
He needs a credible profession.
That's right.
We're going to talk about that next week. It's a really good interview, so mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it. In the meantime, you can find us online at RaisingRealMen.com.
Yep.
If you're interested in us speaking at your church or homeschool group, mm-hmm. HalandMelanie.com.
Right.
And find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen.
That's right.
And Facebook.com/HalandMelanie. You know what? Right. And you can find us all over social media at pretty much anything /RaisingRealMen.
That's right. Well, look, we want to thank you so much for sharing an hour with us here, and we appreciate you being part of our broadcast. This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network, and until the next time we join you, this is Hal
and Melanie,
and we are talking about making biblical family life practical. Thank you so much.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/HalandMelanie or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.